you're supposed to avoid certain topics if you want to stay out of conflict or avoid offense in our society, with race and religion near the top of the list. But we're going to wade straight into that territory today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. I was inspired to do today's show by a sermon I heard from one of our guests today to think about how the church addresses racial prejudice. Religion is a realm of morality and trying to do what's right, but Christian teachings don't necessarily address race directly, and in fact, religious views have changed over time. In fact, the ethnic and racial groups self-segregate into their own churches to a large degree. So our topic today is the responsibility of the church to address racial prejudice and how exactly that happens in our churches in Alaska. And I've got two guests today who I'm really excited to have a conversation with. And I'm hoping you will join us in that conversation as well. I'm going to give you the phone number and email address where you can get involved in just a moment. But we're just to sort of get started here, I want to introduce Sarah Brown, who is the pastor of the Alaska Native Lutheran Church. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Michael Burke, rector of St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
Thank you, Charles.
And your calls, if you would like to get involved in this conversation, is the number you would call is 550-8433. And if you're outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Michael, I mentioned that I'd heard the sermon, and in fact, you were the one who preached the sermon. And it was last month. We were coming into the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and Martin Luther King's speech on the Washington Mall, and the Trayvon Martin verdict had come down, in which the man, the neighborhood watch person who had shot this young black man, had been acquitted. And you chose on a Sunday morning to talk about that, and I'm just interested in what inspired you to choose that topic on that particular Sunday.
Well, thanks, Charles. First of all, I made the decision not to address the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman verdict the Sunday after that had happened. My feeling on that was that emotions were still too raw, and we needed a chance to kind of process not only what had happened, but the country's reaction to that. But after a few weeks went by, I became increasingly uncomfortable with what seemed to be a deafening silence. Clearly, this was on everybody's heart and minds, and yet people had a certain reluctance to begin the conversation, recognizing all of the landmines and ways in which the conversation could go badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was one of the ways you got into it was in presenting these optical illusions where there's an image and you don't immediately recognize what it is, and then you can realize you can see it two ways. And I'm interested why you chose that particular vehicle to start the conversation.
Well, I think when we talk about racism or any kind of bias or racial prejudice, perhaps a helpful image is that of an iceberg. I mean, the majority of it operates below the level of conscious awareness. So people find it very easy to say, I'm not prejudiced. I don't participate in any of the racism in our culture. And yet it's there. It's in the water we drink. It's in every bit of air we breathe. The optical illusions were a way of really giving people the experience of all looking at the same thing. And I had them on pieces of paper handed out. And yet it's really interesting. In each optical illusion, you could see one of two possible images. And I asked how many people saw, say, the woman, and half would raise their hand. And how many saw the older person's face, and another half. Now, can you see the other? And it's interesting. Some people, once it was pointed out, could very quickly see both. Some people, even with their neighbor in the seat next to them pointing it out to them, found it almost impossible to see.
Mm-hmm. And that's a metaphor for how we respond to each other when we run into people who are different or have a from a different background.
Well, it was interesting after the Trayvon Martin verdict how people understood even the facts very, very differently. And the experience, the formation we have growing up and the experiences that we have in life, in a very, very significant way, more significant than we recognize, actually alter the perception we have of what is happening, even the perception of what the facts are. So we use not only the optical illusions, but a series of pictures that were not optical illusions, but showed something that was readily apparent when you looked at the first picture. people laying on a brick wall with their feet spread out across the sidewalk. But then on the back was the same picture with the frame expanded. And suddenly you realize that, no, actually these people were laying in the street and their feet were up along the wall. And you could tell because what you thought was a stick in a man's hand was the leash on a dog. Mm-hmm. And you recognized, okay, the dog is not standing on the wall. Mm-hmm. And when you recognized that, immediately your perceptual frame could shift and you could suddenly see what you could not see beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I think that illustrates in many ways the experience we have when we come to something, whether it is the O.J. Simpson case or the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case, anything which has a real racial overtone to it, that our perceptions and even how we process the information is radically different depending on our experiences and how our perceptual system has come together over our lifetime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's very, very different depending on who we are and who we're talking to. And my other guest, Pastor Sarah Brown from the Alaska Native Lutheran Church, you have a predominantly Native congregation.
Yes.
And you'd mentioned to me that in talking about the March on Washington and Martin Luther King's speech, in a predominantly white group, if you brought that up, people would think, oh yeah, that is inspiring. That's, you know, must be February, Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
But when you asked your congregation, what is your dream for your children? It was a sort of a much deeper feeling.
Yes.
And what's that all about?
Well, thank you for remembering that moment. First of all, I want to begin by saying that I am the pastor of this mm-hmm. congregation. And that I myself am primarily Caucasian, I'm part Cherokee, and that I in no way speak for the Alaska Native community. And I think that's important for me to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm someone who pastors with and to using the accompaniment model of my church, where I am there to accompany the people in their journey, their spiritual journey. So I just wanted to begin with that.
Sure.
First.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here to speak from my experience.
Yeah.
That being said, I have pastored several churches, and this is my first predominantly non-white church. And in my rural white church, when it came time to talk about, even saying it came time to talk about Dr. King,
mm-hmm.
it seemed to be it was his birthday or it was February. And in this church, when I talked about the Civil Rights March, we talked about our dreams. And the fact was, there was a very poignant sense that we're still on that march and that we're still have a long way to go with the dreams that we have, and that there was a sense that we were dreaming for our children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you feel like issues of prejudice are a daily factor in the lives of your parishioners?
That's unequivocally yes. Yeah, absolutely. Be it in the relationship we have with other white Christians in our greater church, or just in the world that my congregants go through in Anchorage, mm-hmm. or the communities that I work with in the state of Alaska.
How do you feel like that manifests itself? I mean, as someone who has never been exposed to prejudice,
mm-hmm.
it takes it a little bit of an imaginative journey to think about, okay, what does it feel like to be in that place? And then occasionally there'll be some kind of a big public incident. A number of years ago, there was a paintball incident in Juneau,
mm-hmm.
where some Alaska Natives were pelted with paintballs, and mm-hmm. it was a video was made. And Governor Knowles at the time took that as an opportunity to create a commission to discuss race, mm-hmm. And that sort of brought it to the fore, and people were talking about it. But then that ended, and it sort of disappears from our awareness because it's not part of our daily experience. But it is for your parishioners in the Alaska Native Church.
Well, I had, on one sense. One way it manifests itself is in the fact that I feel like I need to be careful in how I say things, that I myself am in a position where I don't want to upset the balance that we've created. as the Alaska Native Lutheran Church, we are, as you pointed out in prior to coming on air, we are the Native congregation within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America here in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And so we're the Native church here in Anchorage. And so we have a relationship with the, for lack of a better term, the white churches, which is how we call them. Mm-hmm. And that in of itself is a racist or racial category that we've placed them in and placed ourselves in. So we have this relationship with those congregations, and there is a balance between how we are in relationship with them. And I've never had to juggle that sort of relationship before. And I have all these things I would love to say, and then I'm in my head going, probably not.
Yeah, I think that's a good topic for us today, because I think that our conversation in this community, and both of you might want to weigh in on this, on race is stunted because you call it political correctness or call it whatever you want, you're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And mm-hmm. so you never start the conversation at all. And when something is not talked about, it doesn't get better.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So
I would completely yeah. agree with that. And I tend to be the person who says it all.
Yeah. Well, that's your job, isn't it? You are people who are, as a priest and as a pastor, you're people who are talking and starting conversations,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily about social issues. I mean, how does Michael? Why? Pretend that I'm a member of the congregation and I come to you and say, Michael, why are you talking about this? This I come to church because I want to improve my relationship with God. I didn't come to be lectured about my political or social views. I mean, what's your response to that?
Well, it's certainly one I think any pastor has heard before. Our relationship with God is inextricably bound up with our relationship with other people, and indeed with our relationship with ourselves. You know, one of the best and earliest summaries of the law, and in fact, the question put to Jesus about what was the most important aspect of the law was to love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Even in that formulation, we see all three parts of that, that your relationship with God, your relationship with other human beings, and your relationship with yourself. And I'd even add, although it wasn't mentioned in Scripture at the time, our relationship with creation. These things are all inextricably bound up with one another. So it's certainly understandable and attractive that we would have a private realm that is purely spiritual, and then everything else in the world would be non-spiritual. But in certainly my perspective and my understanding of the Christian faith is the world is not divided up neatly into sacred and non-sacred portions, that all of life and all of our existence is imbued and infused with the presence of the Almighty God.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no artificial separation between let's just talk about private spirituality. Oh no, now we're getting into social policy or politics.
Well, but in some people in sort of the secular realm, if I could use that term, although you've just mm-hmm. said I sort of pointed out that I shouldn't, but say okay, you know, religion, stay on your side. You know, we don't want people to be told what to do. We want to we'll respect you where you are, and we want to be where we are. And you're saying that that's and you can speak to your congregants in terms of these social issues, but do you think that you have authority to speak to the broader community as well?
Well, I'm not sure any of us, you know, wants to claim authority to speak to everyone in the world at mm-hmm. one time, but clearly I feel a call to speak. You know, who is willing to listen and who's willing to put up with me speaking is probably another question. But there, this resistance to talking about matters of faith and values doesn't just come from the secular world. It also comes from portions within the church. There are people who would love to have their private piety and their private sense of spirituality completely compartmentalized into a section of their life, and therefore it does not have to affect their business decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have to affect their investment decisions. It does not have to weigh in on matters of national security and international policy.
Right. Whatever you do on Saturday night doesn't matter as long as you can get up for church on Sunday morning. Right?
Well, and I would also argue that history would bear out that these social movements that are underlying what we're talking about, things like the civil rights movement, came out of the church. Mm-hmm. The black civil rights movement came out of the church. Dr. Martin Luther King was a preacher. Mm-hmm. Pastor Michael and I both follow the lectionary. And this Sunday, one of our lectionary readings comes from Amos 8, Dr. King's famous speech. One of his famous quotes was from Amos 5, "Justice shall flow down like a mighty stream." And so our language is even peppered with the words of Scripture, and that is yet considered the secular realm.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you look at Alaska Native history and where we are where we are today, there is the church is fingerprints are all over it, whether it's the secular realm or it's
And I want to get more into that, but I want to make sure to give out the phone numbers for listeners who may have questions about our topic today. It's a deep and complex and perhaps a little touchy subject, but one that I think that almost everybody out there has some experience in dealing with one way or the other through your church or through your experience of race and prejudice in our community. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And if you just want to shoot us an email, it's hometown@alaskapublic.org, and I can read those on the air. I have two guests in the studio today. Reverend Michael Burke is the rector of St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Pastor Sarah Brown of Alaska Native Lutheran Church. Sarah, you mentioned the relationship of the church to the Native community in Alaska. And that's a very difficult topic that I've discussed with some Native elders, not always with a lot of success, because mm-hmm. traditional life ways in Native cultures were obviously pre-Christian, and then there was contact and missionaries who kind of wanted to get rid of those old spiritual beliefs. And now in our time, there's a desire to bring back tradition, mm-hmm. and yet a lot of times those traditions may not be totally in concert or may be viewed as being conflicting to the Christian teachings that now people believe in very deeply. Is that an issue that you have to deal with your congregation?
I would agree with your assessment. I would say that in my congregation, there is a perception that is a problem, and yet, so back to perception,
mm-hmm.
And yet where we're coming at from our theology in my tradition, we would really like to see some healing. And that's where I'm talking about this accompaniment model. And we would like to see some healing from the damage that was done historically. And so an example would be in my congregation, we host a traditional village New Year's. And we bring in one of the dance troupes, the Whales Dance, I've only been in Alaska for a couple of years, so please excuse my pronunciations. The King and Canute dancers come in to our congregation on New Year's, and I would say we have 1,000 people attend, 600 to 1,000 people attend the traditional village New Year's.
Wow.
When we bring in maybe 300 to 600 for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it is more of a mission opportunity, and it is more of an important cultural moment in my congregation's yearly history for us than Christmas or Easter, which is not to say anything unimportant about those theologically. But we are trying to mend some of those historical abuses, mm-hmm. and abuses done, unfortunately, even by the Lutheran Church.
So for listeners who might not know what you're talking about, the entry of missionaries into rural Alaska sometimes was, it was intended, obviously, with good intentions, but not, it wasn't always. And what are some of the sort of legacies you see from that in the people that you work with today?
Well, like you say, I would say that many of my elders and people don't know their own history as well. And I don't mean this in full judgment. I would say there has been a loss of history, rather. I would rather say it that way. There has been a loss of history through the way that the people were missioned to, that has been to the detriment of the Alaska Native community. And there is a movement in the Alaska Native community, both inside and outside the church, to bring some of that back. And that the church in my congregation is in participation with that.
Trying to help it happen.
Yes.
And you don't see any conflict between that anymore, although obviously 100 years ago, someone in your position maybe did. You see no conflict between that.
Yeah, you know, and, like speaking of the dance, the dances that occur on New Year's, I've had elders say to me, you know, there was a time when we couldn't do this in the church. And it makes sense to me. I come from the Lutheran Pietists. The Lutheran Pietists didn't dance whether they were white or native or who, you know, whatever color they were. Mm-hmm. Of course, they would have taken that tradition out. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, because of how important that was to the culture, that caused great detrimental effect. So for us to bring that back, to bring back the native games, to bring back whatever traditions we can, that's just going to help us unearth even more knowledge as those things come up. Incorporating native healing traditions, anything that we can.
Mm-hmm. Michael, there's a great story in Alaska history of Reverend Sheldon Jackson sitting down in a hotel room in New York City and with leaders of different missionary churches and saying, okay, you get that part of Alaska. I'll take this part of Alaska. You get that part of Alaska. Does the Episcopal Church have a story to tell in terms of the impact of missions, and how has the view of the church changed over a century?
Yeah, I think when you look at the history of Christianity coming into various native cultures, it really is a mixed history. Some places it was just absolutely devastating. In other places, it brought some wonderful things. It's also difficult to talk about the move of the Christian religion into indigenous cultures because it did not come in by itself. It came in largely as part of a package of Western economics and law and Western dominant culture and social norms and expectations, a different ethic of how we use the land and subdue it. So it came along with everything else. But recognizing that the Episcopal tradition within Christianity really came across through Canada and came down through the Gwich'in people, and the first church in the Episcopal Diocese of Alaska was actually in Anvik, a native church. So that's changed our particular history and development. Today, the Episcopal Diocese of Alaska is roughly half native, predominantly Gwich'in, Athabascan, and Nupiaq cultures, although a presence in southeast as well among Tlingit and Haida. Very little among Yupik or Aleut peoples. Mm-hmm. So we've had a somewhat different history, and we've had our own history of mistakes and lessons learned, but also a wonderful history that needs to be told as well, mm-hmm. about people recognizing when white contact first came into indigenous peoples, that God was already there. And it was a matter of, you know, can God give grace to the eyes of the Western missionaries to recognize the forms in which the gospel was already present among the people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a lot of bad that was happening in that gold rush era in which Native people were being victimized and mm-hmm. really needed the social services that the missionaries brought and the protection that they brought.
Well, and along with the Spanish flu.
That's that right.
Caused.
Just the medical care, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, it brings up another issue, Michael, which is how does the church change in its teachings? obviously the teachings about race relations and all of these issues are very different now than they were not only a century ago, but on some issues, if we talk about single-sex marriage and gay rights, within the last decade, have been massive change. How does that take place? And I guess I'm interested in just how it takes place in terms of sort of, there's obviously a procedure, but sort of in the deeper level, we think of spirituality being some eternal. How can it be changing all the time?
Well, there's a great assumption being made when we approach it from that perspective. Uh-huh. To begin with. The theological answer that I'd want to give first, Charles, is just to recognize that as a person of faith, as a Christian, I would say, first of all, that the gift of the Holy Spirit was given to us as the people of faith, and that the Holy Spirit will lead us and guide us into all truth, that is a process of unfolding revelation. Now, I know for some Christian ears, the idea that God's revelation is progressive and unfolding will be quite shocking and heretical, mm-hmm. but certainly I would stand by that. The second thing is to look at this from a historical perspective. You know, human cultures change, and they change when they get more information. They change as a result of experiences. In the biblical record, especially during the time of Jesus, we saw a lot of things that are described in the Gospels in the language of demonology. And I don't want to get into the conversation about whether there are demons in the world or not, or what they look like. But certainly a lot of these manifestations of symptoms that we read in the healing accounts in the Gospel of Luke and other places, today we would understand as various symptoms of mental illness. Mm-hmm. That would have been an unthinkable way to categorize those in the time of Jesus. So certainly as culture develops, as we learn more, the field of psychology and human relations, we have to remember, is historically very new. So there's much more understanding about human dynamics, human relationships, human attractions that constantly create a feedback loop where we're not only going back to our original sources and our roots in scripture and tradition, but we're also working through our own human experience and our capacities of reason, which are a gift of God, to bring these into some kind of dynamic mix where we really have to answer the question, what is God calling us to do in the 21st century within our context?
So it's, in a sense, it's the members of a congregation looking into their own hearts and then discussing it and coming to a group decision. And if they can't, then you've got two congregations. Is that?
Well, we hope we can live in that tension. Mm-hmm. Different denominations, different church traditions.
I know the Episcopal Church, there's been a huge split, hasn't there?
Well, there has been a huge conversation and discernment period. Mm-hmm. There has been a split. It's been, you know, in no way 50-50. Mm-hmm. To be even charitable, it's probably 90-10. But clearly, since the 1960s, there was a parting of ways, in which people who held to one understanding of the tradition and how faith works in our lives went one direction, and people who had a different understanding kind of regrouped and went in another direction. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that kind of reformation in a lot of certainly mainline or old-line denominations, but even now we're seeing it in other so-called non-denominations as well. Mm-hmm. Among young evangelicals, there's a huge divide over what they believe is the right and holy thing to do in terms of marriage equality, for example.
Yeah. So, and for those who don't know, we were discussing the issue that happened in the Episcopal Church with the ordination of homosexuals as priests and bishops, and that some in the church simply couldn't countenance it and sort of went their own direction. And that when you're talking about the 90-10, you ended up with sort of a division there. And there's a process of voting and so forth where all that's resolved. That's a great topic, and there's a lot more to talk about all of this. We're already halfway done with our hour, and I have so many more questions. And I hope that listeners will get involved. I know it's heavy, and our speakers are so eloquent that you'd be hesitant to want to weigh in. But I know they'd love to hear your questions, and I'd love to hear your questions and comments too. How do issues of race and of prejudice play into your life with reference to your spirituality? Are the two related or are they unrelated, and why? You can call us and express that, and I'll give you a minute to get a pencil to write down the number. We're going to have a short break, and we'll be right back with more of Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our discussion today is about prejudice and the church. What is the role of religion in dealing with the issue of racial prejudice, ethnic prejudice in our society? I have two guests in the studio, Michael Burke, who is rector of St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Sarah Brown, pastor of Alaska Native Lutheran Church. And I'd love to hear your questions and comments. Can you weigh in on our topic? Do you have anything personal to share, or maybe a question for one of our guests? If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Sarah, we were talking before we went to the break a little bit about change in the church and this issue where people may not agree with new points of view. And in fact, some of our minority churches are quite conservative on a lot of social issues. How do you address that? Do you feel like sometimes like you're nudging your congregation along, or how does that conversation take place between you and the and your congregation in terms of these issues that we've been discussing?
Well, there is a little back history. My congregation ordained the first homosexual Inupiat minister, and there was tension in that congregation in that moment. And so, without backing off from those issues, I do feel like there are so many issues that face my congregants. There's poverty. There is equality in education. There's access to education. There is addiction. And so for me, I don't really have the luxury of spending a lot of time on maybe some of the full spectrum of issues when I'm having to do triage ministry.
So all the spectrum of problems facing a person, sort of pushing them along in terms of a social dialogue might not be the key thing. But is there also sort of an issue of not wanting to go into difficult discussions because they're difficult?
No, not that at all. Like I think the key phrase is triage ministry. When one is dealing with a community that is suffering so hard by so many issues, it's not a good time to say, and how do you feel about your sexuality? You know, it reminds me of when I was in seminary and they said, and you need to talk about sexuality with your elders. And I just, when my elders are worried about housing and food security and things like that, I'm really not going to deal with their sexuality.
Right. Why is it important for Alaska Natives to have their own church?
That is a really good question. And I think it parallels a lot of ways that Alaska Natives feel safer in have named ways that they feel safer in society, like with their own school. A little back history, my congregation began roughly 40 years ago as a ministry to displaced villagers. So we didn't begin with the idea of being a congregation. We began as a place for people who had come from the villages that needed some help. Mm-hmm. We evolved into becoming a congregation as those villagers found a home here. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And so as those people became Anchorageites, they created their own community. And so on one sense, it was just an organic formation. But I think that as a safe place for us to be, it's like at the top of the hour when you asked me some of those difficult questions, and I said, well, I don't know how I feel about answering those. It's a place where we feel safe talking about things that matter to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Michael, I know St. Mary's is diverse. People from, you know, many walks of life go there, but it's primarily white and sort of a very different community from the one that Sarah's talking about.
That's correct.
And so when you, what kind of resistance do you feel, or do you feel resistance to? I mean, you were very upfront in talking about the equal rights ordinance and the controversy that just took place in Anchorage a year and a half ago. Is that something folks support, or are some people uncomfortable with that, or how do you work that role in with your church role?
Well, I think it helps that St. Mary's comes from a 50-odd year history of being willing to wade into contemporary issues of social change and social justice, is willing to talk about from their perspective as people of faith, as followers of Jesus, some of the cultural changes and political changes in the world today. So that's a helpful background to come from. It really is in our DNA. I think primarily, though, we talk primarily really about things that are quite personal. Our relationship to God, our relationship with Jesus. What does it mean to be a person who claims to follow Jesus? But following Jesus has implications in the wider world. And it's difficult to talk about what it means to be a faithful disciple of Christ and not talk about, do I have an opinion upon stand your ground? Mm-hmm. And if so, what would that be? Yet it's not so easy that we can simply pick up a Bible and find a helpful proofed text. Although in our tradition, we don't do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult to point to Scripture and say, here is the definitive answer. Scripture does not talk directly about stem cell research. It doesn't talk about social responsibility of multinational corporations in a market economy. It doesn't talk about global warming, violence in video games. These are all things that we really have to work out based upon some of the values and teachings. But to expect that a particular parable told on a Palestinian hillside in the time of Jesus is going to address the kinds of issues we have today is kind of ludicrous. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yet you can certainly make an argument that the human heart is relatively constant through time.
But what do you think about the facet here that, I mean, I think it's easy to understand what Sarah was saying about Alaska Natives wanting to go to an Alaska Native church and share their experience and share the assistance they can give to each other. But what about the idea that, you know, people are sort of shopping around for a church based on where they fall on the political spectrum? You know, if they're very liberal, they'll go to the Unitarian Church. If they're very conservative, they'll go to perhaps Anchorage Baptist Temple. And sort of left of center, they might be at St. Mary's. And I mean, is that a good way for churches to be to build their congregations to sort of be political and sort of in our polarized partisan society?
Well, I would certainly hope that we're being driven out of our sense of what is faithful to the gospel, mm-hmm. not on some kind of, you know, read of market conditions. Mm-hmm. But I think from the individual's perspective, you know, I would hope that if I was looking for a church, I would want a church that comforts me when I need comforting at a time of great trauma and loss, diagnosis of a life-threatening illness, losses in my personal life, then something that speaks to me with a word of comfort and mm-hmm. and safety and security and deep love through those difficult times is going to be necessary. But if I went to a church that only gave comfort, It's a very unhealthy spiritual diet from my perspective. I would want to be at a church that sometimes really pushes me in ways that I do not want to be pushed, that raises very difficult and uncomfortable questions that I do not want to talk about or engage. I wouldn't want to go to a church where that's all I heard all the time. And realize as a minister, as a preacher or a priest, I'm looking out at 300, 200, 300 faces, realizing there's 20 people who need comfort today and solace. And there's another 30 that probably really need to be lodged and knocked out of their complacency and their comfort zone. And the difficulty is, how do you do that? You can't do that well on any one day or one sermon or one service. We're blessed at St. Mary's that we have four very strong voices on our preaching rota that rotate. And because we're different people, you're likely to hear over the course of several months everything from comfort to challenge to questions that are being both raised and discussed.
Why do you think these issues are so difficult for us?
Because we're human beings, Charles.
Well, I mean, why can't we, you know, in the words of Rodney King, why can't we get along? But I mean, there are, I mean, seriously, there are this spectrum in society which seems to be becoming more and more divided. Wouldn't you agree, Sarah? You know, it seems like we're more and more one thing or another thing. And we have fewer and fewer forums where everybody is talking together and hearing the same voices and sort of processing as a community. And I guess I just wonder if you see that reflected in church, you know, and is that either of you, is that something you feel a responsibility to address?
I think a lot of people are talking about polarization and polarization in politics and how to solve that problem so that we can get the government back running and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And definitely, I think there's polarization in the corporate church or the greater church, as we define it. And it's interesting because on one hand, I'm so grateful to be here, to be invited into the conversation, because Michael and I come from what is known as the liberal tradition. And yet, I mean that like in liberal arts, not as in politically liberal, but the liberal tradition in a different sense of the church. And we seem to be getting, whether we've stepped out of the conversation or we've been pushed out of the conversation, or we just don't have the greatest sound bites, whatever it is, there is a loud voice that has been dominating the Christendom and the Christian conversation, and that seems to be coming from a more conservative place and a place with a more polarized view that you're pointing out. I don't think that Alaska Natives choosing to worship in a safe space is an example of polarization at all, because they are a minority. And I think that's a different idea. That's protecting yourself.
Yeah, I think that's important to point out. If I grew up in a rural village in Alaska, my experience of church would be very different than my experience growing up in Anchorage. For one thing, people who come from village backgrounds often tell me that walking into church, their experience of church has always been that when they walk in the door, they not already know everyone there. In fact, they know everyone's history and everyone knows theirs. That's a very different sense of safety and what you are accustomed to than walking into St. Mary's on a Sunday morning and seeing 200 people, the vast majority of which do not know your name or your history and are not related to you. That can be a very overwhelming dynamic alongside this tendency of the dominant culture just to run roughshod over every other tradition and culture other than their own. So those are difficult things to hold in tension, but simply to congregate based on affiliation and common history and culture is not in and of itself is a bad thing.
No, and I also think going back to the idea of how one worships in the village, depending on what village you're in, that village might be fairly integrated. And so just as you know everyone there, or probably related to everyone there, that village may have a high percentage of people of different races, or, you know, at least, you know, whites and natives represented. Something that is unique about my congregation is we are the only 7 o'clock service for Lutherans in at the Anchorage area. And so we're not exclusively Alaska Native. We have a lot of people who just need want to get church in and are working in the morning.
Okay.
And so by default, they end up at our church and they're kind of looking around and then they go, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, going to a new church and new group of people is an amazingly mind-opening experience, isn't it? So we haven't gotten any calls, and I think that that's because you guys are too interesting and nobody wants to weigh in. But if you do
you're very kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Either that or these microphones aren't working. No, I know that this is a topic that a lot of people are interested in, and one that we've said is a difficult dialogue, and so not everybody wants to dive in. But if you have a question, we have a little bit of time left here. The number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. In terms of this, the issues of prejudice in relation specifically to natives, I don't know, Michael, if you've thought about how those can be addressed from the urban perspective. I mean, what can we do to bring our state closer together between the urban, you know, not no longer, I mean, we're a very diverse community in Anchorage with many races, but sort of an urban perspective, dominant culture perspective, and the native perspective. Have you thought at all about how those are brought together, or how we reach out to Native and rural Alaska to bridge that divide?
Well, probably the most important thing I've learned, although I say learned in quotes because I know it intellectually, and whether or not I put it into practice is a huge question mark. It's certainly not something I'm good at, and that is simply to shut up and listen. Mm-hmm. And to walk alongside. And that's something that does not happen as often as it should when congregations self-segregate and self-select based on shared history and culture and experience. Mm-hmm. There is a huge loss to the larger congregations who do not have that very integral and necessary part of the whole face of the city. I think that is what is lost when we have Sunday morning as still a very segregated time. Mm-hmm. We lose that opportunity to walk with one another, to listen long and carefully to one another over a long period of time, and to begin to build a common body of shared experience together as people from very different faith backgrounds, very different cultures, very different experiences growing up. Mm-hmm. Because that first part that we talked about at the top of the hour, the perceptual difficulties, they only begin to break down when we really walk alongside and live together for a prolonged period of time in a very intentional way.
Mm-hmm. And I would say about that a little bit of back history. I have a gift that is given to me in my job is that I get to spend a lot of time in the villages. And so a great place for me to shut up and listen is in the villages where I get to learn the history of the people that I'm ministering to here in Anchorage. But along with that, in the self-selecting, when it is that we have a chance to work together, it feels that so often my congregation, when we are asked to participate in ministry with other congregations, we are asked to do so as something like a cake topper. You know, we're asked there
tokenism
to decorate the moment. Mm-hmm. And so any invitation that we receive that is of genuine desire to walk with is greatly welcomed. But it also has to come with that understanding that it's going to take us a long time to trust, because my congregation doesn't trust me. I've only been in this position called now for a year. I've spent a couple of years in Alaska. It's going to take me years for them to build some trust with me. And so...
And I'm just... That's an extraordinary statement. So I just... What do you mean by not trust?
Well, I haven't stood by my word long enough. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a problem recognizing that that is going to take time.
Yeah. I've sure seen that in rural Alaska, certainly as a journalist, is that you really have a lot to prove because of those who've gone before who have been exploitive, mm-hmm. and or who show up and then disappear, whereas the people who are from there have been there a long time and know one another and they don't know you. Mm-hmm. We have a caller, Dan from Anchorage. Dan, did you have a comment?
Yes, I was wondering what do you feel are the effects of not only worship style but music used in worship as far as sort of defining a community or calling to a particular demographic within a community?
Well, great question.
Well, I have an idea who Dan is. without calling him out, I think Dan's a colleague of mine. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that Dan might be pointing out is that my congregation uses a different hymnal than the majority of the other Lutheran congregations in town. We actually use a mission hymnal that goes back to when we were first missioned to. So we use these great old gospel songs. What's interesting about it is the theology of these songs is in many ways very different than the Lutheran theology that I'm called to preach. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these songs have really spoken to the people and developed one set of theological thoughts, and then I'm coming in with this other set of theological thoughts, and so it creates quite a melting pot.
Yeah, that goes to that change thing we were talking about. Michael?
I have an interesting anecdote on that. A number of years ago, in a series of listening sessions, I had the opportunity to sit with a number of our Native Alaskan elders and members of the Congregation of St. Mary's and asking, what can we do to be more welcoming and inviting and inclusive of people from village backgrounds, people from Native backgrounds? And one of the first things on the list was, well, you could start using traditional church instruments. And I thought, well, tell me about that. I mean, we're an Anglican and Episcopal church. We have a pipe organ, you know. And they said, oh, no, those new modern things like pipe organs, we're thinking of a guitar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that goes back to a tradition of missionary showing up in the village with, mm-hmm. a guitar?
It's a matter of whose tradition are we talking. One cannot assume there is a tradition.
Yeah.
Clearly, within much of the interior and the Arctic coast, the traditional church instrument is an acoustic guitar, and there is a body of hymnody, a body of songs that go along with that. To play something from Bach on a pipe organ, mm-hmm. is completely new and of a different culture and a different experience, and mm-hmm. does not feel like church.
Well, and I come from a head tradition, a very intellectual tradition that really thinks out what it's going to say and believe. And that's what I mean by theological perspective. Mm-hmm. And another anecdote is one of the pastors I know was arguing with a native singer over one of the songs. And he was like, oh, but the theology is so bad. And this singer, who I happen to be friends with, said, but they're so fun to sing.
Yeah.
And so...
And the heart is so right.
And the heart, exactly. Yeah. And it's just, they speak... I mean, how great thou art. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are songs that really just speak to the emotions, mm-hmm. and bring you up spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Dan, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, it's just that we have been sharing our facility with a congregation that is primarily Southern Black Gospel, and we're basically South Suburban Anchorage. And try as we might, the other pastor and I have tried numerous times to get our two congregations to work together and to do things together and to worship together. And we can do some things together, but when it comes to worship, you know, it's like our music, their music, different kind of music. I don't want this kind of music. I don't want that kind of music. And I don't know, I guess for me, I just really see where music in particular seems to be almost as much of a defining factor.
Yeah, it's almost like food.
Yeah. One would speak.
May I ask a question? Or we don't have time?
We're running a little bit out of time. But thanks for the call, Dan. We have an email that I want to get you to weigh in on, because it's another type of sort of political or social issue that you'd want to maybe weigh in on or maybe not. Please comment on how church might help First People, or I would say any people, deal with exploitation of resources in their communities, i.e. Pebble Mine, coal mining in the Mat Valley. These are really the hot day-to-day political issues. Are these, do those have any place in church? We just got a little bit of time left, so either of you go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I've just begun to educate myself on the Pebble Mine issue and the idea that that these would build up the economic resources of the villages. I think the church has a great responsibility to respond to that issue and what it means to take care of the land and take care of the resources.
Michael, I would imagine that in your congregation you have like total opposite points of view on that, and that would be tough to take on something like that.
I think one of the values of community is that we do learn to live with one another with our differences. I mean, in many ways, it used to be said that the church is a hospital for sinners, house of saints. Another way of looking at this is it's a school where we learn how to love each other deeply. In the midst of our differences. I would never, ever want to go to a church where everybody believed the same thing. You might characterize St. Mary's as somewhat left of center. One of the things I value is we have people that are very conservative in their beliefs. We have people that are very, very progressive in their beliefs. What holds us together is a willingness to walk with one another and to learn what the difficult task of really listening and loving one another in spite of those differences.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody belongs there, as long as they're willing to go along with being part of the community.
That's for everybody to decide. Uh-huh. But certainly everyone is invited and welcome. We probably aren't the place for everyone. Uh-huh. People will know that and will be able to make that decision for themselves. Yeah. That's their decision to make.
And politically and theologically, my church is shockingly among the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thank you to both of you. I've enjoyed this conversation very much, and I really appreciate you coming forward and being willing to discuss it. Reverend Michael Burke is the rector of St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Pastor Sarah Brown is with Alaska Native Lutheran Church. It's been a wonderful hour, and again, my great appreciation for your being with us. Next week, Kathleen McCoy will be your host on Hometown Alaska. She'll be talking about financial literacy for young people. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can find today's show there with the link and listen to it online. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer of Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.